This BBC podcast is supported by ads outside the UK.
Hello, I'm Katia Adler, host of the Global Story podcast from the BBC. Each weekday, we break down one big news story with fresh perspectives from journalists around the world. From artificial intelligence to divisive politics tearing our societies apart. From the movements of money and markets to the human stories that touch our lives. We bring you in-depth insights from across the BBC and beyond. Listen to The Global Story wherever you get your BBC podcasts.
Welcome to The Documentary from the BBC World Service. I'm Carmen Mohammadi, and I'm here in the Italian city of Florence, one of the world's most popular tourist destinations, and my home. I'm sitting in the sun outside a cafe in Via di San Nicolò, a small street just outside the city centre. I'm here to tell the story of how new technologies and hypertourism together have profoundly changed the character of this street over the last 10 years or so, and to find out what we might do about it. That's why we've called this episode The Street That Tech Built.
It was like being part of an amazing sculpture.
People really have this like fear of missing out.
What changed was that Google Maps sent them that way.
I've lived in Florence for 16 years now, and when I first moved here, this cafe was just across the street from my apartment. And it was here that I would sit every morning, and I would work on my first book, and I would watch local life unfold around me. I met all of the street's characters, and this is where I, too, started to become a part of the fabric of the street. But now, all I can see and what you can hear are literally thousands of tourists.
In the morning, like at 3 o'clock, I used to wake up and walk in the streets, and it was like being part of an amazing sculpture. It was amazing. It was such a beautiful thing.
This is my friend and neighbour, Giuseppe. He was born and raised in Florence, then went away to university in the States, and when he returned, he found himself marvelling anew, not just at the city's beauty, but at its rather special creative magic.
For an artist, every shape, every form is somehow talking to you in a total silence. That was probably the best Florence that I ever experienced in my life.
It just was extraordinarily stimulating to the imagination.
This is another good friend, Christabel Kent, a novelist and long-time resident on this street. It was Christabel who sent me to Florence to write my first book. And indeed, I lived in her apartment when I first arrived.
When I walked from the Via Romana, which is where I lived, to this, the end of the Via San Nicolò, it was stupendously silent and lovely. It had a most extraordinary atmosphere of purest quiet. There were no other people. There were these magnificent tall buildings. So you had this marvellous feeling of having the city entirely to yourself in all its sort of layers.
In our modern, hyper-connected and overstimulating world, the fact that these little patches of silence existed in the streets around here, just a couple of hundred yards from one of the most popular tourist destinations on Earth, is amazing. And as Emiko Davies, a well-known local cookbook writer, explains, that's what made this neighbourhood stand out.
For the longest time, I felt like San Nicolò was one of the neighbourhoods that was really like resisting change. That was something I loved about it, was you could just, when things were sort of a bit hectic and chaotic in the centre of town, you would meet up with friends in San Nicolò because it was quieter and it had all those little, you know, cute little places to meet up with people. And it felt a bit more like you were still walking distance from the very centre, but it really felt like you were in a Florentine neighbourhood.
But then, about 10 years ago, something started to change, and it began on a road just by the Via San Nicolò.
It's not so much that I noticed that silence disappear overnight. There was always an interesting contrast between the little piazza, and along one side of it were three or four bars, always absolutely packed with, we used to call them the playboys, didn't we, with Italian gentlemen of a certain age in very tightly fitting jackets, drinking very elegant cocktails in the evening. And those bars just sort of died suddenly.
Hi, I am Luigi. Everybody knows me and calls me Luigo. And I'm the owner of the High Bar in San Nicolò.
Luigo is another good friend. And his place is on that very street where the other bars started mysteriously closing.
The flow usually goes behind. In the room behind, which is via San Nicolò or otherwise cross along the Longarno.
So they no longer pass along the square, which is, I suppose, when I arrived and before, so it used to be.
The square, yes, yeah. They also do walk through along the square.
The number of tourists is truly enormous. In 2024, Florence is estimated to have had 15 million visitors to a city with under 400,000 residents. And every day, thousands of those visitors pass through our tiny neighbourhood. They're walking from the historic city centre on the other side of the River Arno to another of Florence's most popular tourist spots, the Piazzale Michelangelo, which sits up in the hills above us. They want to take the viral photo of themselves in front of the city at sunset.
It's also a kind of natural thing to do, is to wander along the river because you get a great view of the Duomo.
But on their way to take that photo, suddenly tourists weren't walking along the rather scenic river route. They were walking down our road instead. So what changed?
Well, what changed was that Google Maps sent them that way. It does not send you along the river anymore.
Because all Google Maps is doing is it's sending you the quickest way, right?
Yeah, and I assume cuts like 5 seconds off the journey. So once Google Maps or whichever map you have tells you to go down there, not everyone will do it, but an awful lot of people will just follow it. And if they're following a map on the phone, then they're looking at their phone. And that's sad. It's a kind of a waste of the walk, really.
These mapping apps, which so many of us use, are actually doing what they're supposed to do. They're sending us the quickest way. But it's had this huge unintended consequence here. One street over, all the bars have struggled, while along the Via di San Nicolò, a new tourist economy has been born. Little independent shops serving locals have closed, and in their place, restaurants, bespoke perfumeries, and boutiques have flourished. In other words, the impact has been enormous, but complicated, as my friend Luigo, the bar owner, explains.
Have you had some personal benefit from the reflow of the tourists? Have you seen anything?
Okay, I'm actually, I have the good benefit that I don't get super busy, but busy enough, which is good. It's probably what I want.
My name is Cletto. I am an artist, a street artist from France, but I live in Italy, in Florence, and my specialty is to work on street sign.
Just around the corner from Luigo's bar is Klett's studio. As a street artist, he's had many run-ins with the authorities and a 6-year court battle, which he won.
It's not illegal. Art is free. It's in the constitution, Italian constitution, number 33. Art is free. Art and chains are free.
Well, now he's very well known and he has turned his studio, which happens to be right on the tourist route, into a very well-stocked and very crowded shop. I asked him why he'd made that change.
At the beginning, it's just a question of economy. I am just an artist, so I am poor. And for the three first years, I was living inside here. Now I have another home. For me, it's important because if you are an artist, a painter, you are always, all the days, alone, closed in a room, and this is not life. Here, I have contact with people, and this is life.
So from your point of view, Klett, with what has happened with San Nicolò, with the amount of Airbnbs now, mm-hmm. with the amount of people who not are just not passing through, mm-hmm. but actually are staying here, mm-hmm. has this, for you, brought a benefit?
Yes and no. It's a problem of politics. I think the politics have to make some law to permit for young people to have a home inside Florence. Tourism, it's marvelous, it's something very interesting. There is a lot of people everywhere from the world, and it's nice to meet all these possibilities. But the city needs an identity, both young people and tourists.
You're listening to The Documentary from the BBC World Service.
Hello, I'm Katia Adler, host of the Global Story podcast from the BBC. Each weekday, we break down one big news story with fresh perspectives from journalists around the world. From artificial intelligence to divisive politics tearing our societies apart. From the movements of money and markets to the human stories that touch our lives. We bring you in-depth insights from across the BBC and beyond. Listen to the Global Story wherever you get your BBC podcasts.
This is The Street That Tech Built, and I'm Carmen Mohammadi, here in the Italian city of Florence. We've been hearing how a small change to how tourists navigate the city to get an iconic photo at sunset has caused a monumental shift to the character of Florence's historic artisanal district. The small workshops, independent businesses, and craftsmen of every variety, which used to be based here, were the engine of the city's history and wealth. But now, they're closing to make way for global brands. And that's not the only way the city is being changed, by phones, tech, and social media.
People really have this, like, fear of missing out. That whole concept is something very, very strong. You come to Florence, maybe you're only in Florence for a couple of days.
This is cookery writer Emiko Davies again. She first encountered Via di San Nicolò when she studied in Florence 20 years ago. But I joined her in the small town where she now lives and runs a cookery school. She and her family moved here a couple of years ago to escape the crowds and the crazy rents of Florence. And her observations about how hypertourism has reshaped the city are fascinating.
People are like, well, if I'm going to be there for 2 days, I need to get that panino, I need to have that photo, because everybody said that's the thing I need to do. And maybe they don't have time to kind of go off the beaten track or lose their way. They're on a mission.
Visitors aren't just looking at maps on their phones, but they're also looking at social media influences. And that makes for some weird viral trends. As an expert in Florentine food culture, Emiko has a lot to say about panini, Italian sandwiches.
I could talk about this sandwich for the whole entire lunch hour.
Panini have become synonymous with Florence, but not, in my view, in a good way.
And you find them everywhere. It's kind of a Florentine thing. And there was a particular sandwich shop in Via de' Neri, and then at a certain point, this sandwich shop sort of exploded. But back in the day, it was TripAdvisor reviews that sort of snowballed. And, you know, TripAdvisor at the time, I still think even now, is something that Italians do not really use. It's really just tourists informing other tourists of what they were doing. So you weren't really getting, you know, a solid idea of where are the Florentines eating, what are they eating, what is good.
We asked TripAdvisor about this. And a spokesperson replied to say,
when TripAdvisor launched almost 25 years ago, it opened up travel recommendations beyond the same handful of tourist traps and restaurants touted by guidebooks year after year. It gave people access to information on any destination, hotel, restaurant or attraction, complete with real-time reviews.
They said they're now trying to include non-touristy hotspots and added,
in some ways, social media has limited travellers' perspectives once again. Viral content promotes a sense of fear of missing out, FOMO, and urgency for tourists to visit the same hotspots as everyone else, leading to the overcrowding of cities like Florence and long lines at popular eateries like the gelateria and panini shops. Social media content can end up condensing a visit to an entire city into a handful of sites and eateries, contributing to both overcrowding and a lack of understanding of the destination as a whole.
I wasn't expecting that TripAdvisor would share mine and Emiko's concern about the type of tourism we're now facing and its destructive effects. And both Emiko and I are now especially concerned about another uniquely Florentine neighbourhood and its wonderful market.
I feel like Sant'Ambrogio until now has been able to keep a lot of its original function as a market for people who live there. You know, and it's a place where you go for fruit and vegetables, but also, you know, they sell household items and things that, you know, are really aimed at residents. I felt really sad the first time I saw some tourists going through the Sant'Ambrogio market. Oh no, they're going to ruin it.
Emiko and I, like most of the people you'll hear in this program, are a bit compromised here. My second book was all about Florence and San Nicolò and the slow Italian lifestyle that I found here. And its success has meant that many of my readers come to Florence in search of the same lifestyle. In Emiko's case, I'd heard that Hollywood actor Stanley Tucci had asked her to show him some of the city's unique street food. His last series on Italian food was a huge success and has already attracted masses of new visitors to Florence. Had I heard correctly?
Yes, and they asked me to introduce Stanley to something Florentine. What's the food that, you know, for you is the most, says the most about the city? And that's a question I can answer before the sentence is even finished. It's lampredotto, the tripe sandwiches. That's sort of where I took Stanley. I really tried to suggest some places that were completely outside of the city centre. I gave them a selection of different places, and in the end, after the scouting, they were like, we want to go to the one at Sant'Ambrogio.
Yes, that's the same Sant'Ambrogio that Emiko is trying to protect from tourists. This is a tightrope that all of us who write about Florence have to walk. How did she strike that balance?
I thought really long and hard about it. Do I want to show them and be responsible for sharing, you know, a beloved Florentine Lampredotto Panino and a beloved Florentine square, a place that I like to go to because it's still very characteristic. And the only thing I can hope is that the idea of eating a tripe sandwich is really unappealing to most people and that they're never going to try it. Like, they might watch the show and go, oh my God, and then, you know, and then not eat it. So that was my hope.
I think that's a pretty hilarious solution. Because while Florence has always welcomed tourists, it's now clear that this new kind of hyper-tourism isn't going away.
It's so hard because I'm very aware of how the city relies on tourism.
This is Georgette Juppé, a journalist whose blog Girl in Florence made her a very early influencer, and someone who has long tried to find the right balance.
I have so many friends who live and work in tourism, and I can see it as such a positive thing because it changed my life as well. You know, when you travel, it opens your mind to other cultures. So for me, the disappointment lies more in the city's inability to properly regulate the issues at hand. And I'm talking about affordable housing. I'm talking about limits to how many big groups visit the city at any given time. Because let's be honest, there's no off season. We're here in October, sitting here, it's raining, it's tons of people in Florence. But, you know, it's not enough to put the onus on people visiting and living here. I want the city to do better for locals.
Which brings us to the final problem, and perhaps the biggest one of all, short-term rentals. That means property owners letting their homes for a night or two instead of making them available for long-term residents to live in, leading to Florence's housing crisis. Here, as elsewhere, this has become particularly associated with Airbnb. And many of the apartments in San Nicolò are now rented out in this way. I asked Christabel about how that works in her building.
Obviously, it's Florentines themselves who are choosing to let out and to rent out their spaces and to move out of the city and let these different brands or universities or Airbnbs move in.
I don't want to judge people for doing that necessarily, but I don't want to do it because it does alter the fabric of the building. You have people coming in at all hours, bumping those blooming suitcases up and down the stairs. We've never had people behaving badly here. But it's simply they're here today and gone tomorrow. And it's nice to have neighbours. You know, it's nice to say hello to people in the street. I do think there's a kind of delicate balance. And once it tips from being a place where people live and work and send their children to school and get an ice cream and get a coffee and say hello in the morning, to being somewhere where you have to wait for 10 minutes before the stream of people passing your front door has gone by and you can cross the road to buy a loaf of bread.
As the character of San Nicolò has changed, as rents have risen and residents have left, I've heard that all these new restaurants are having trouble finding staff because locals can't afford to live in the city anymore. I asked my friend Luigo whether that's true.
Yes, of course. You know, they can no longer live in the city. Somehow it's easier for foreigners, not because they own more money, but they are just arrived, so they are more into share one room in between the three of them, you know, while someone with family, you know, has to do a different kind of life. So loads of people moving out from the city, moving in countryside towns, and obviously if they do get the opportunity of finding a good job, they'll forget the city.
With the whole of the historic centre of Florence a UNESCO World Heritage Site, it's impossible to build more homes here. And with close to 20,000 short-term lets registered and at least 12,000 operating in the city, that's an enormous number of homes out of commission. Not all of them are let through Airbnb, but as the most prominent company here in Florence and around the world, I asked them what they had to say. A spokesperson told us,
Airbnb is an economic lifeline for thousands of Florentines. We recognise the challenges facing historical cities and support balanced rules. We want to work with leaders in Florence on a more proportionate way forward that preserves economic opportunities for local families and their surrounding communities, clamps down on speculators, and makes tourism more sustainable for everyone.
This combination of hyper-tourism and the way that technology has changed our behaviour when we travel presents huge challenges for Florence. And it's not really obvious how the city should respond. Earlier this summer, signs appeared reading, Yankee go home, and they plastered the whole city. And a recent campaign has been taping up the key boxes that are used by people doing short-term rentals. But we're hardly alone here. Many cities are suffering, and in some places, anger has boiled over. Georgette, the journalist and blogger, wonders which route this city will take.
So Santorini, they have this obviously over-tourism problem as well, and they were saying that they're trying to battle the effects of hyper-tourism, but there's less of an onus to kind of blame or be aggressive towards the tourists because they understand how, you know, important it is for their economy. Whereas in Barcelona, there's a different vibe. I wonder if in Italy, people are a bit more similar to the Greeks in that way, where there might be a sign of Yankee go home. But I don't see people, you know, coming out with their water pistols just yet. But of course, that could happen.
If the next trend is going to be sustainable tourism, if that is really what we're talking about, I mean, Florence would be the absolute ideal place for that because this is the home of slow living, slow working, slow making, quality. You know, that's what's so appealing about it, that sense that you come every day, you sit in your workshop, you work away at something. You know, it might take you 6 months to create something incredibly beautiful. So if we are really trying in our world to move away from sort of throwaway culture, from fast fashion, from all of these things, that's where Florence should actually really be coming into its own.
Absolutely, I agree. I think that there's a lot to be done in how we market the city and how we, you know, encourage people to travel here and what they should experience. The sustainable tourism is such a pop word, and I see so many articles about it, but then I'm like, how do we really put this into actionable steps?
And who better to ask about actionable steps than the new mayor of Florence, Sara Funaro? I wanted to know what she has in mind for areas like San Nicolò to make sure that they can still function like neighbourhoods where residents can live.
Io, oltre a essere sindaca di Firenze, vivo nel centro.
As well as being mayor of Florence, I live in the historic center. I live in the Sant'Ambrogio area. That's an area that offers me a whole series of services at the market or the parking lot, or at the neighborhood shops, or at the center, which analyzes blood for health services. We have to work to make sure that all this is there so that citizens can still choose their neighborhood.
But what about the housing crisis? Can the mayor do anything about all those short-term rentals and the click, click, click sound of suitcases being pulled over ancient cobblestones?
At this moment in time, we are experiencing this in Florence, but all the major tourist cities know there is a problem related to tourism. So we started my term as mayor with a whole series of measures to try to answer the phenomenon of over-tourism and also improve accessibility for citizens living in the city, starting with the issue of expensive rentals in a city that has more and more short-term tourist rentals and where we need to have a turnaround and make sure that the city is livable for citizens. That's why, among other things, we've brought a local rule, the first in Italy, to put a stop to short-term tourist rentals within the UNESCO area of the historic centre. And we're working on an important housing plan to make sure Florence is increasingly attractive for residents, for students, for workers, for citizens who decide to live here.
A couple of weeks after I spoke to her, the mayor announced a new plan, including a ban on key boxes and noisy tour guides with loudspeakers. She made it clear that there are limits to what she, as mayor, can do without the support of the government of Italy. But she also said that she's determined to learn from cities across Europe, especially Barcelona, with its water pistol direct action.
So I'm working to make sure that this does not happen in Florence and to make sure that citizens hear from their local government and that it brings them answers. Looking at what other mayors are doing, it's clear that there are some good examples we can learn from.
At the same time that the mayor was announcing her plan, the Italian government said that Italy should take more tourists. And so the question for the future is how to resolve this real tension between the demands of locals like Giuseppe, Cristobal and Luigo for a livable neighbourhood, the tourists' natural human desire to travel and to see the best that the city has to offer, and the aims of national government, which wants economic growth and the wealth that tourism brings. Thank you for listening to The Street That Tech Built from the BBC World Service, which was presented by me, Carmen Mohammadi, and was produced by Giles Edwards.
Hello, I'm Katia Adler, host of the Global Story podcast from the BBC. Each weekday, we break down one big news story with fresh perspectives from journalists around the world. From artificial intelligence to divisive politics tearing our societies apart. From the movements of money and markets to the human stories that touch our lives. We bring you in-depth insights from across the BBC and beyond. Listen to the Global Story wherever you get your BBC podcasts.